Jen Coast, Council Staff.
Allie Cohn, Care Council Staff.
David Jordan, Care Council Staff.
Mark Holman, Care Council Staff.
Dean Goodwin, Nature and Health Services.
Kevin Hutchcock, Nature and Health Services.
Kim Fowler, and Wise Change.
Jack Bowman, Prevention Council.
Eric Sutter, Care Council.
Hey, thank you, everybody, and welcome. You take a look at today's agenda. It's two pages this one. So take a look. Are there any changes or amendments from staff? And not hearing any, is there any objection to approving the agenda as written? Seeing none, it is approved. Let's look at, take a minute to look at the minutes from last time, from September 24th.
Oh yeah, just for the sake of my integrity, I was absent, but I was excused.
All right, your integrity will be intact.
Integrity is intact.
If anybody wants an electronic one, you can just like send it to
Sure. Any other announcements? All right, let's move on to the debrief of the October 8th joint meeting and passage of 5 motions. Any discussion on this? Say anything about the joint meeting? Well, I will. I don't think it could have gone any better, really. We accomplished what we set out to do. We stuck to our agenda. We have come together in a way that was not foreseeable a year ago, and I think we should all be very proud of it. We have momentum and we have buy-in from both councils. It's just it's reassuring to me. So thank you all of you for the role you played.
Yeah, but it's good meeting. There's a lot of progress. It's good to see things passing. And I felt real motion. We're okay. Now we're leaving. The wheels that came up and the flight is really on. And then we were like Murphy. We were 5 in a row there, like the Mets guy. So.
Yeah, I just want to thank everyone, but I think you both in particular for the exceptional association.
I want to concur with the chair of people did a fantastic job.
Thank you. Was there anything you want to say about the
Yeah, so what we're going to be looking at is this here. We can't have it as a PowerPoint. Do folks mind just following along on a paper? Okay. So this was a survey that Care Council staff sent out to other care councils across the U.S. This is mostly just informational. It's certainly not not a model or a suggestion or anything like that, but it's just kind of a cross-section of different EMAs and PGAs across the country, including one that has merged. So the purpose was really to get any trends and types of values that were emerging in other parts of the country. So on the second page, we reached out to 23 EMAs and 28 TGAs, and we got about 25% of those back, so 13 respondents. Of those, 9 were EMAs and 4 were TGAs. For those of you that aren't familiar with the language, a EMA just has more AIDS cases, and transitional grant area has between 1,000 and 2,000. So, and they both have to have a population of at least 50,000. Next, just looking at basics of each council. Council size, the average was 27 council members. Next page into demographics. 48% HIV positive and 39% unaffiliated consumers of service. So I think there's a clear perception of value of having a really strong HIV positive voice. So it's far above that 33% threshold. Moving on to demographics. An average of 60% of members were from communities of color, and average of 44% women, including trans women. Government.
Did we make any trans women or others?
No, the question was just about around women. So for government and provider representation, the average of percentage of members that were voting reps was 14%. Notably, there were 2 that didn't have any voting DPH reps. And there were, as an average of 32% service providers on each council. Committee. Also, if anyone has questions as we go through this, feel free to just shout it out.
Committee. So is that clear then for the difference between government representation? Service providers.
So the government reps are like housing and CI. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, yeah. From some local branch of the government versus a CBO.
So what would a clinic workers be like from what you say to the government?
In some ways they have dual status.
Yeah, so those might be represented in both categories. Next, we asked about committee structure.
Oh, we should also make clear that we didn't respond to this survey. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our numbers are not included in this. So we asked about committee structure, and we got a huge list of committees, and we actually just pulled out some of the most frequently occurring ones to see if there was anything of interest. And some that stuck out to me was many had one that was many different names, but one that was dedicated specifically to HIV positive consumers. Many had an affected communities type committee, some that were named by the communities they were targeting. And there was, I think, 3 early identification of individuals with HIV AIDS, which is sort of a linkage based committee that I think ties in nicely with prevention and care efforts. And then there was 2 prevention committees. The next slide is just about assessment. So we asked how often they review the goals of their comprehensive plan, how often they do needs assessment, and how often they do grantee assessment. And the answer was very regularly, mostly on an annual basis. And of note, I think, is that in the needs assessment section, 100%, so all respondents do at least 1 annual needs assessment. And of those, nearly half do both a large EMA-wide and small targeted needs assessment. Next, DPH representation. So 9 had voting local DPH member reps, and 4 did not. 1, so separately from that, 1 had a governmental co-chair, and that was the council that had merged. Interestingly, 1 one that was not merged reported that their prevention committee was chaired by a local DPHRF. More about merge councils next. So only one had merged, one was in process of merging, and nine had not merged or had decided not to merge for some reason. And even of those that had not merged, 31% had prevention representation on their council as voting members. And two councils had a prevention committee, one of which was chaired by their local DPH rep. Does that make sense? That's a lot of. So, I mean, what I take from that is even in situations where they haven't merged for whatever reason, that there is a clear increase in integrated planning. Next, trends and conclusions. Most of this is just a repeat of previous, that assessment across the board is really valued. Most of them meet on a more or less monthly basis and value HIV positive consumer voice, affected communities, and prevention representation. One thing additionally that wasn't shown elsewhere in the PowerPoint is about allocations. So we asked how many had applied for the 75-25 waiver. For those that aren't familiar, it's the something that exempts you from falling in that 25-75 gap where 75 is allocated to core medical. So only three had applied for it, and I think that some of those reasons might be around that their states hadn't expanded Medicaid, so there wasn't as much flexibility, and that there was even 87% going to core medical in one of the cases.
Do you have a breakdown geographically where across the United States?
No, they were anonymous responses, so we don't have any of the information on who, what area was which.
On the envelope, we have to be turn address.
It was online. We could track them down, but it's beyond my capability.
Watch that integrity.
Yeah. You're excused.
So one of the things that stands out to me really, because I'm not sure there's a lot of information here that stood out to me as like, wow, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that, is actually how ahead of the curve that San Francisco is per usual. I mean, it was only a 25% return rate on this, of course, but only one merged council. So that was exciting to see. For me, I like our area being ahead of the curve and forming the structure for others who have not actually had, I guess, many years of experience in working with the epidemic.
Do we do a 75-25?
Yes.
For 2 years? For 2 years of secondary. What it does, just makes the obvious sense, it allows us to spend more on support services than rather than core medical, because core medical saves money because of ACA. People are transferring off Ryan White onto ACA. Nothing else? Okay. Next, we're going to talk about other lessons learned. We have Jose Luis. Take it here.
Was running late, so as we've talked about before, David and I sit on the national committee called the Urban Coalition for HIV AIDS Prevention Services. It's a coalition of currently nine of the directly funded urban jurisdictions by CDC around specifically focusing on HIV prevention. We reached out to our colleagues in Chicago, merged 3 years ago, to get a feel of what they have done. So this is beyond the survey. This is from their, what they've sent us. So what, and this is their, they call it CAHISI, the Chicago Area HIV, sorry, it's a PowerPoint on my phone. Chicago Area HIV Integrated Services Council. CAHISI. Which,
Khaleesi.
And you know what? They are wrestling lots of dragons over there in Chicago because the city of Chicago is directly funded for prevention, but their EMA for Ryan White covers Chicago, and I believe it actually goes into the next state. I mean, some weird thing that it covers. Yeah, it does the little bottom of the leg there. So they're struggling with their dragons. And they're in Kahisi 2.0. They did a year and a half of their original, which was kind of like, if we go back a year and a half ago, transition work group presented two transition plans, and one was merging the councils but having a care committee and a prevention committee, and they went that route, and then they figured out they continued to be siloed, continued to not integrate, and then they went back to the drawing board, and now they have this new structure. So the committees are linked around the cascade. So they have a primary prevention and early intervention committee, linkage and retention committee, ART, viral suppression, membership and community engagement, and then there's steering. Their steering is made up of two community co-chairs, the government co-chairs, the co-chairs of the four committees, and two at-large members. And that's kind of their structure. It doesn't mention how many members they have on it. But that is... I was asked not to share this PowerPoint, but that's why I didn't send it out. They just wanted to show me that first part because this is a draft for what they're presenting soon. So that's why I shared
it. How long has this structure been in operation?
This current structure has been in operation, if I remember correctly, a year and a half. So they've already started their integrated joint plan. They started that process a year ago. They hadn't already done a joint EPI plan, so that was their why San Francisco has. So that's why they needed to start a little bit earlier before the guidance had come. Any questions? We had a long conversation with them in Baton Rouge about it. There are two community co-chairs.
That's it.
Two community co-chairs and one governmental co-chair.
Do you know if they have any, if the community co-chairs have to have any attributes to them, like person of color, gender?
It doesn't break that out in here. Okay. I can follow up with that question to them. And I have a call out to the Los Angeles HIV Commission for the same information on their committee and membership structure. But I can ask them.
Do you know when they merge?
3 years ago.
I think the idea of sort of structuring committees around the cascade seems interesting. It feels like a place where both prevention and care, it's like a system that both prevention and care are already sort of committed to, I guess. And it seems like there's a place where both prevention and care can interact on the same topic, opposed to having something like a prevention committee, which is like you said, it still silos the topic out of sort of like the broader conversation, opposed to sort of integrating prevention and care into all the conversations that have to happen in relationships to the cascade.
I'm really curious about this the committees by cascade. It was brought up in a collaborative work group, but it wasn't really discussed or fleshed out. Would you be able to find out what those individual committees that are based around particular parts of the cascade, like, what do they do? Like, what jobs have they given themselves specifically? I think it's an exciting way. I mean, part of me is very nervous about it because I think there's existing committees on the planning council and existing work groups on the prevention council that need to continue in some format. But part of it's really exciting because in a new council, this is a new way of looking at something that either of us have done, and it's kind of exciting that way as well. But I'm not sure, what do they populate their agendas with? What are the tasks of each committee?
So let me see if I can pull that out of this presentation. Because this is them presenting their plan. So these are some of the recommendations that they'll be presenting soon. So So their primary prevention and early intervention is talking about access to PrEP, expanding high-impact prevention around coordination, addressing needs and at-risk, integrating holistic approaches to primary prevention. Linkages and retention is about coordination of their EIS efforts throughout the EMA. EIS, the linkage piece or what we have here links. Standardizing expectations regarding use of peers is another one. Their ARV viral suppression is around further investigating disparities around that. Best practice, developing best practices. And then there's, that's it.
I feel like I'm hearing a lot of things happening potentially in those committees that are getting to zero group might be working on as well. Interesting.
I think it's also, I don't think I'm wrong about this. Right now, our bylaws say that we need to have a community engagement event every year, and they dictate how many meetings we can have a year, but there isn't any set workgroups. It just says that we can do workgroups. And then they're based around whatever topics or based sort of like most applicable at the time. So besides the community engagement event, there isn't actually anything on the prevention side that there isn't like a standing workgroup that we're like, we really got to keep that. Unlike something like membership or a group that exists on the care side.
Yeah, that was
very
one
flexible.
Of the things that. Does it seem from looking at that first committee that that actually seems in some ways to be a prevention committee? Not that, I mean, in some ways I think it's all how you look at it. I think having a prevention committee could potentially lead to, well, okay, look, that's a prevention silo. And looking at it from the framework of the cascade in some ways repositions the way you look at it, but they might essentially be doing the same thing.
But I also think that there's like, I think there's an opportunity to look at. So, like, I was thinking about it. Like, you're asking,
yeah.
You're like, shit.
I mean,
I'm reading high impact prevention, and I'm going back to the CDC's guidance around high impact prevention, which includes prevention of positives.
Oh.
So, not necessarily
well, yeah.
Like, beyond the tests and the. So, and it's also about at-risk. Holistic health, primary prevention, so
it is much wider than something that's purely a primary prevention committee.
I mean, really, the system of prevention that we have here
has a lot of this stuff in it. We've been funded for, we've been doing high impact prevention for like a few years here. The emphasis on the Cascade, San Francisco is one of the better outcomes on that, even though there's still a lot of room for improvement.
I think we actually have a sort of unique opportunity to look at some of the stuff that we've been doing separately and from like a new perspective. Like I was thinking of like something like linkage to care could sort of like fall sort of squarely in the realm of care because it has to do with HIV positive people. But I think that there's also, but it's HIV test counselors who are the people who are having that contact, right? So there's a place where care and prevention are kind of meeting with each other and sort of exchanging, you know, that was weird. But like sort of doing work with each other around a client or a situation. And I think that even something like just testing or high impact prevention, being able to look at it from the perspective of what kind of messages or what sort of systems should we be putting in place so that if somebody tests positive that we're already sort of setting somebody up for success in terms of navigating the system of care for HIV positive people in San Francisco or whatever. I think that there's just like a place to be able to start seeing some stuff differently than I think we had before.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, guess what's happened with this recent CDC funded, which the AIDS Foundation was awarded along with St. James Infirmary and Glide, is that's really what's happened. So we're doing outreach, we're finding high-risk negatives, but within the high-risk negatives, when we're doing outreach and bringing people back in, there's folks who are already positive that are lost to follow-up. So it's like, you know, it's prevention, it's care, it's happening simultaneously with the same program, but the funding allows us to have a dedicated person to do the navigation. It's called the Health Systems Navigator, but it's like you just care basically for HIV positive folks that are lost to follow-up and for nearly positive. So, and then the get to zero kind of piled on top of that, because in the CDC thing came out first and then get to zero were like, oh, we'll have us some of that. So they kind of created another three navigators because they're good at doing things really quick.
And they're an active entity, but I'd like to learn more about this for another conversation for another day.
But yeah, so we're kind of doing that, and I just feel like it's almost like the what's happening on the ground is already this kind of merge. We're looking at prevention and care as being part of almost the same system of care and prevention. And it's like we're going to be the body that's representing the system of care and prevention through community-based organizations, care, funding, and the Department of Health Prevention. So it all makes sense, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, well, we're discussing committee structure soon, now at this meeting. So I want to move along on the agenda, but there's certainly lots of food for thought from the reports. Thank you, Jose Luis and Allie. So let's move on to the bylaws.
Hi. So you guys have a very robust document in front of you. It's the one with the yellow highlighted section. So Oscar, Ali, Mark, and I met and kind of did a crosswalk of our current bylaws and kind of matched up where there was similarities and where there might be differences and where things might be in the bylaws in one council but in the PMPs of the other. So just did a crosswalk. What we would like to do, instead of going line by line, because that would be extremely tedious in the meeting, because a lot of this, some of this is just a shared goal where it's already in there. It's just would be wordsmithing the two bylaws into one bylaw. And others are things that the joint leadership need to resolve, such as name of a new merged council. Other things are things we've already done, such as our mission and vision. So what we would like to do is continue to go through this as staff, pull that out, do some possible, or do suggestions for possible language, and then bring that back to the joint leadership section by section. So that we're not going into the whole thing at once. So doing, maybe the first couple, the purpose, the let's leave the name for last. But just membership, and some of the stuff will, the bylaws changes will be dictated by this group anyway. So it'll just be us bringing that language back into what it would look like as bylaws.
Yeah, I would just add that. I think it's kind of like a mega Excel document that I think is just unwieldy to look at all at once. And there's a couple of categories I think that the policy bylaws usually fall into as we were looking through it. And I think some could easily move to PNP, which would take more off the plate for the bylaws discussion. Some, this where it says shared goal, is something that we would tighten up the language so it would be applicable to both care and prevention. But beyond that, it's already a shared goal, so it wouldn't be a content change. Some are content changes and would need to be resolved by joint leadership. So those, I think, could easily be added to our list of issues to discuss. And some are mandates, so those also require less discussion.
This looks great. And this is a lot of work. I mean, thank you guys for putting this together. I know this is really very wonderful and instructive.
but just like, is there anything that happens sooner or that we should maybe look at?
We didn't really have a discussion on who we should prioritize, but it was mainly around how are we, this unwieldy document and populating it.
So I think we probably all have our own opinions about what might be a priority.
I see a name as a priority.
Because until then, it's called the Toko Jisho Council.
Well, I see, you know, meeting schedules would be something we might want to look at, as well as membership officers, of course. So,
but it doesn't seem as much as I expected.
Yeah, and a lot of it really could be moved to P&P.
Yeah. At which point a work group at some point can take over that work.
What's
the difference between a HRSA goal and a HRSA mandate? Like, why would they have a goal that's not a mandate?
I think you might have used those interchangeably, or was there a reason why you used one word?
Well,
together?
I think that's specifically around the section.
Oh, yeah. So if you're looking at, say, the second page, the top one about assessing the efficiency of the administration mechanism, that's a HRSA mandate.
Okay. And then also
it's a goal they provided us.
Coordinate with federal grantees that provide HIV related. That sounds also like a mandate, not a goal.
I think that's actually more of a goal than
a mandate.
Yeah.
Okay. I just didn't know if it was interchangeable, but it was a literal difference.
In some ways, HRSA, let's make the same CDC, but HRSA has very specific things that it absolutely needs to happen in the HIV Clinical Council. Other things are certainly listed as things that have to happen but don't have the same priority as others. So in some ways, they're all mandates, but there's some things that we absolutely will have to do. There's other things that we can work with without being penalized by anything.
Right. Okay.
Now, the next agenda item is prioritizing this. Just a second. I just want to say that the next agenda item is prioritizing some of this. This was just presenting, and I'd likewise change to take over and move us through the next agenda.
Well, the other thing I was going to say regarding with the bylaws, even though we're going to still have to go through and do some crunching, as some people would say, could not a sub-work group be committed and then work with staff from CARE and prevention and all work together on it? By the way, instead of it just being totally on staff and on both, but we have some members that are involved also.
So we talked about that and the timeline for that was asked of us was to present it sooner than later, and there was the Prevention Council couldn't add another work group in this calendar year. So the question is, we could do that, but then we'd push off some of this work to next year. So that would be a decision of this group on whether to continue to move forward with the timeline that we have, or essentially a pause button.
Yeah, so I can respond to that as well. Similar to Jose Luis said, the danger of doing that is that this puts off key things for us to even be able to merge. Council members will weigh in on whatever council staff actually gets together and put forward. We'd only be putting forward the issues and perhaps some suggestions. Then it would come to the council, to the joint leadership, to actually adjust, update, ratify as they see fit. So there will definitely be involvement from council members on a much larger level than even a work group level. It would be at this level if we can't make these decisions.
Well, I was going to just kind of move forward because there are on the PowerPoint, I think on your handouts, I'm not going to go through the motions.
actually Ellie.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, I just want to add really quickly that I think will lend itself to the next discussion, just to propose a couple of things for moving forward. How does the group feel about adding some of the content changes? If we pull those out, pull out any content changes, and add those to the issues list that Event has been cultivating. And then separately from that, I'm wondering if we can, at some point, probably next month, vote on whether folks are okay with moving some of the suggested items to PNP instead of bylaws. And separately from that, if we identify the language that would need to change for the non-content related things and just brought that back.
That would provide a
seems like a threefold.
For staff to actually have
so three different.
Yeah, so like tiers of importance. So content list would go on to Yvette's list. We would vote on whether we can offload some of the content to PNP. And then just the language tightening, like around jurisdiction or just basic care versus prevention language. We could. So I think that to me seems like a lower tier of importance.
Yeah, so the agreement on the next agenda is actually, you look at that Alex's suggestion and sort of use that as instruction for the staff of both councils to guide our work outside of joint leadership.
And I have to do the same thing when we do get to PNP.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But PNP, they'll be, I think, a more relaxed pace in some ways, where people really go policy by policy.
But there will be some things we'll have to do with the board.
Yeah, bylaws.
Okay. Anyone else before we hand it over?
Okay. Yeah, so I'm going to just, I'm not going to actually go through the motions, but I wanted to at least have you have it in your handout that how these are organized are by the six care council motions or the conditions for birthing and the motions that have passed so far. I'm not going to go into that. But as a carryover from the previous conversation, I feel like this document really is helping to figure out, well, what are those conversations and issues that have to be discussed as a joint leadership work group? What are those things that could be discussed in a joint policies and procedures work group that wouldn't start until 2016? And then what are some of the things that we already have on the document that has to be done in the new year? And so we organize this by several slides. One is just what we already know to be on the docket for the joint leadership work group, that these are the remaining issues so far. The leadership makeup, the size upon attrition, and we actually combine that with the designated seats, the committee structure, and then the meeting facilitation. So those are the ones that we have so far. I'm going to just move to the next one, and then we can go back to any one of these slides. And we have that on the handout as well. And then we started a to-do list of here are the things that the joint leadership work group so far we're going to need to discuss together. So the first one was just to present that crosswalk of bylaws and the policies and procedures. And really, it's to determine the timeline and to discuss what needs to be discussed here. To actually set a target date for the merged council, determine the name of the merged council, develop the application process, arrange the mayoral appointments, and what we wrote on the end is really to, by individual council, vote to approve the bylaws of the merged council, and then to vote to approve the dissolution of the individual council bylaws. Then we also have at least the starting of the list, and we created this slide before we got we have this information. So we knew from just the previous conversation that the fine-tuning of the vote by proxy needed to go. We were recommending that it would go into that joint policies and procedures work group, and then also whatever we're hoping from the staff, what your recommendations are around what can be discussed after the merged council and what needs to be discussed before. And then the last is that I also put on the September date of what the CDC and HRSA is already wanting, which is that joint integrated care and prevention council plan that's due in September, and then also a letter of concurrence. Anything from the staff that you want to add or say so that it clarifies me as a layperson, not an HIV council person, that you want to clarify?
Is there anything from the bylaws discussion that needs to go up there?
I think we have to review
yeah.
the document.
You have to review it. Okay.
Yeah. But yes.
I think so.
But mainly that's what we have as, I mean, I'm calling this the, it's like a living document for now until we have a better understanding of what needs to happen. But this is the list. So any questions about what's been presented? So if not, then I'd like us to actually go back to our list. And basically what we have on our discussion item for today, at least to start, is the leadership. And I think it's on your agenda that what we were hoping the discussion format would start with is what are the mandates regarding this issue? How do we currently look? How do we look if we're merged? And then by suggestion, there was let's you know really fine tune the issue, but start with the straw poll where people stand, and then have that discussion. So I think the first one is a third, one-third HIV positive in all leadership positions. What are the mandates regarding this issue?
There is no person mandate around this. There is a self-inflicted mandate from the HIV Planning Council. Which has been very easy to fulfill.
Which is?
The HIV one positive person that they one of the group of
okay. And what about committees? Is that just
there was a so one of the motions that was supposed to come to be decided, we talked about this a little bit at the joint meeting. One of the motions is a much more strict perspective on that topic, which was that every single committee, work group, and leadership array will include one-third unaffiliated HIV positive.
I wasn't referring to that motion, I was referring to our policies and procedures. Is it just a tradition that we try to have one HIV positive person chair each committee?
Yeah.
One of the coaches.
Tradition, a chair tradition, but as far as I know, not actually a policy.
It's not a policy. Anything on the prevention side? Is it HIV positive? But you have a relatively high percentage.
Right. In our council, yes.
I mean,
but it's not a requirement for it.
What is your proportion?
Roughly. We are yeah, we strive for a third, but we're over that. I think we're at two-fifths.
Okay.
We're not at half, but we're not at a third either. So we're at 40%.
Okay.
When you say leadership in this context, are you only talking about the council co-chairs, or you're talking about committee co-chairs, or...
Yeah, I mean, I want
to
go back to that.
On the care side?
I mean, in this conversation in general. So it says one third of leadership. I'm just curious if what that means is co-chairs or?
Council
co-chairs. Council co-chairs or committee co-chairs?
I think on the presentation that Yvette just went over, that's talking about simply about co-chairs.
Okay. So we're just saying one out of the three.
Yeah, but you know, keeping in mind that there is a, you know, there was a motion that came from care that certainly expands or adjusts that in some ways, that this committee will have to
actually didn't open or close it to co-chairs only. I think we were referring to that third bottom motion, which was coming around all membership, leadership roles, and needs, right? So that's why we wanted to clarify from that bucket of HIV, 33% HIV positive unaffiliated, what does this group want it to look like? And so we don't have a, we could start with co-chairs if we want to have the merged council. But I think it's beyond.
Okay, because it just said leadership, so I think that talking about council membership and leadership all combined as 33 and a third is a different conversation than say than just talking about leadership. Right? So you're talking about membership and leadership. So I just wanted to make, I wanted to understand exactly what the body of people we're talking about. We're talking about the whole thing. The 33 and a third question.
Let's start with the whole thing.
Okay.
And then I think that there is an added question after the whole thing, conversation, which is about the chair of the committee.
Exactly. Yeah, I was just kind of doing a little review of each side's requirements before we start the discussion so everyone knows
okay
what the requirements are for care intervention. And then we can talk about the coaching.
Okay.
That's all I was doing.
Regarding the, in the all leadership positions, my opinion would be, regardless of being the co-chairs of the full council or the co-chairs of each committee, at least one of the co-chairs could be an HIV positive person.
Okay. So we know what the council looks like. So now,
Chip.
Okay, I just want to say that we want to talk about what a merged council will look like now, what it looks like now, what we saw, or what we think we, or what we saw. So, just want to keep us on top. Okay. And who had their hand up? Oh, you.
I forgot about that third motion that actually occurred in the joint meeting. My concern was there was a motion from the care council that was just kind of floating there. But I forget that Mary Lawrence made a point of saying, well, we should actually have this motion. And seeing them one after the other, in some ways, that motion handles that motion, much like the other ones above. So I'm not necessarily seeing a pressing need for that motion to continue on as a discussion topic, unless the group itself feels. But just looking at one to the other, it's clear that that one, like all the ones on the right, replace the one from the left.
Right.
So the discussion has happened, and either the joint leadership or the joint council have weighed in on those motions/discussion topics.
Well, so I think we have, what we voted on the motion kind of just touches on a portion of that motion, but we didn't really kind of discuss the leadership roles and meetings, and we just said the entire council will have a third affiliate HIV consumers. So
there was a little bit of a discussion about the ramifications of one third positive throughout all committees, work groups, and leadership of all committees and work groups. There was some discussion on that.
There was discussion, but we didn't really come to any kind of formal decision on it. So I think that was kind of that was part of this discussion, if I'm not mistaken, was to actually speak to that the remaining portion and actually come to a decision about, do we want that? Do we not want that? Is it sustainable? Is it not sustainable? Can we? Is that it? Yeah.
I guess I was just talking about as far as a matter of process, because seeing that up there makes me think that currently, at least, because that was passed, that in some ways replaces that. However, that doesn't mean that if those are still living issues for people, that new motions couldn't come up around that topic. Just as a matter of process, like if no new motion come up, those would in some ways, that would set that third. Third on the right sets the structure right off the bat, while still, of course, adhering to our main thing.
Well, I'm going to actually suggest that we start with leadership of the merge council and the co-chair, explore the co-chair, and let's do a level agreement, 1 to 5, on HIV positive. Basically, I think, taking from what I heard from Jack, let's start with where people stand. So I'm going to just... Actually, I only have 3 of these. I'm sorry. I thought I had 5. So just really co-chair.
Not really a question, but sort of an observation. I mean, it was interesting from the survey that the average percentage of HIV positive people is 48% across the ones that responded. So that just seems common. And you know, hopefully we, and it's been sort of a tradition of the Care Council to try to have 50% council be positive. So I don't want to see it limited to one third.
Nothing limits it.
Yeah, I know. But
so, is it one third of the leadership of the merged council should be HIV unaffiliated? Is that
well,
what
it's
I'm
actually
doing?
Currently under our own bylaws. See, that's where it's, in some ways it gets tricky. In our bylaws, it's actually consumer of services. It doesn't mention unaffiliated or affiliated.
Okay.
In the motion that the Care Council wanted to be considered, it makes it unaffiliated, which is, I mean, there's a big difference there. For example, Chip has an affiliation, so he would actually no longer be able to be co-chair at that point.
Well, I can be co-chair, but there would have to be another co-chair that was HIV positive.
Who was unaffiliated.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So currently, Chip has no problem sitting in the seat because our current bylaws simply state consumer of services. So it's, I think it's maybe more.
So tell me what it should say.
I think HIV positive consumer of service, if you want to go by what our current bylaws are saying.
Okay, I'm sorry. Can everyone see this? Can everyone see now? Okay. So this is the... So one out of the leadership, one ideally is the co-chair that represents the seat of HIV positive consumer of services. And so I'm gonna, so let me just go through the level of agreement. One is veto, two is do not support but will go along, three is abstain, four is support with reservation, and five is strongly support. So I'm gonna. Can we have two people who can raise their hands and count, or just count? Yes, Jack.
No, we can count.
Okay, thank you.
No, we're not.
Right.
We will be
raising
hands.
Yeah. So.
I can't imagine with 50% HIV positive people that it's ever been a problem finding an HIV positive co-chair. But I guess that was my only thing. Was like, has it ever gummed up the process by saying, like, you don't have anybody.
No.
No. Okay. That's all.
It's been a non-issue.
Okay. So, can, any other questions, or can we do that straw poll?
Maybe wait 1 minute for Michael.
Here you go.
So, okay. Can you repeat the question? What
right.
People are voting on?
At this point, would you agree or veto, so would you either strongly support one of these, where are you in this level, that
okay.
One of the co-chairs should be HIV positive consumer of services?
Okay. I can help keep track.
Okay. And we have...
No,
we have
it's fine, because I'm not going to vote anyway. We're not voting, so...
Okay. So, raise your hand if you're one. One is a veto. Okay. Two, do not support but will go along. Three, abstain. Four, support with reservation. Five, strongly support.
I have to count.
Count. Tell me what it is.
It
is
oh, I didn't actually count because everyone
it's 13.
Was
13.
Yeah.
I was 13.
13?
Unless I missed somebody.
Or just all.
Okay. So if it's unanimous, I don't think there needs to be a discussion, right?
Is but there any further discussion on this? Then we should call a
vote. Okay.
Do you want to do a vote round for the one co-chair, or do you want to wait until all of the co-chairs have been determined? Whatever, one at a time or all together.
How about one at a time, just to
So we can count. So we can actually count wins.
Yes.
Motions that happen.
Smaller trees. Smaller trees.
Exactly.
I'm all about that.
Just to clarify, this is for the joint full count.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
As we get through this process, we will also figure out how many co-chairs we will have.
Because we have more attributes than we have co-chairs currently.
Well, we're having ones.
Well, I think, well, if you are trying to ask, I mean, if you're trying to figure out a motion, I think that the language might have to be cleaned up. Like, is it one or is it one-third of the leadership? Like, how do you want to...
So a motion could be...
or just one co-chair.
Leadership of the merged council will include at least one HIV positive consumer services. Someone willing to make that motion?
Sure. So moved.
So moved. Second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion on that?
Can I say a question?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think that is good, but I don't know if this is a scenario, but if we end up with like five co-chairs and one of them is HIV positive, maybe we actually want to have two. So maybe the conversation is, maybe we first have to decide how many co-chairs there are, and then we can decide how many of those co-chairs should be positive.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I mean, I like the idea of the small victories, but at the same time, like, a lot of small victories can lead to five co-chairs. So,
if we want that, Matthew.
Michael? And I also just want to point out that we're not talking about HIV positive. We're talking about HIV positive consumer services, so it's a tighter delineation than that, and not everyone who's positive is also a consumer of one of my services.
So they're not likely that they were put over with one.
You could just change it to at least one and no less than one-third or something like that. It's sort of cover your bases.
Does that sound?
What is that?
And then, say the least.
Well, the one thing, like me and Chuck was talking here on the side, we also got to keep in mind if we're going to, say, you have four or five co-chairs, we got to look at that, because then, again, if we're going to have one,
yeah, but actually, the language can be adjusted per Dave's suggestion, and in some ways we move on to the other co-chairs because that language would allow one or more. So his recommendation was, say,
at least one and no less than one third.
So with a motion still on the floor, I guess I'd ask the mover and the seconder if that would be appropriate, if you would still agree with that change.
Well, let's discuss that a little bit.
I would potentially agree with it, but I also feel like it gets complicated if there is like five people.
Right.
Four, I mean, what's like a, yeah, like we can't split people up. So.
What you have, we have is you have an over representation. If you have three co-chairs, you have a third. If you have four co-chairs, half have to be HIV positive, non affiliated consumers. If you have five, three fifths have to be.
Yeah.
So that's.
Yeah.
It's not the spirit of the original motion.
Can I make just a suggestion to our process? So we have agreement on this. Can we continue and then see where we wind up and then form a motion and then try to see how many co-chairs we want to have, at least just kind of keep going and then see where there's agreement and then start building motions around things so that way at least we have some context of the bigger picture, because right now I think it's a little up in the air.
Sure. Okay.
Should we continue with since we're on care, should we continue with the attributes from the care council and then move to prevention? Or do you want to do one separate and then
fine?
Okay,
and the only thing I'm gonna suggest is maybe at 5:40, that's when I would suggest that we
motions.
Yeah. What do you think of that?
So I did want to clarify this. It was mentioned twice. So is this currently in the care bylaws, does it say, or policy procedure, is it consumer Ryan White, so HIV positive consumer Ryan White services? Because in the merged council there will also be programs that are non-Ryan White.
It simply says PLWH consumer.
But wasn't that always the assumption that they were consumer Ryan White services?
That's the assumption in a Care Ultimate Council.
Yeah.
And
so if we leave it at that language, and we assume that means consumer of either federal funding, CDC or running away.
Yeah, because if it's not adjusted, we have to.
Yeah.
As a person who accepts a free condom from a prevention effort qualifies as consumer services. I'm pushing the limit here, but his definition is actually campaigning.
I wonder
if yes, I think for an HIV negative person that that is true, but I think because we're only talking about HIV positive people in terms of this, then
positive people accepting the condom is prevention as well.
Would that be considered a prevention consumer of services? If you accepted a condom, is that an intervention that's paid for with CDC?
I'm using the most extreme example. Because it falls under prevention of positive activities, condom contamination. Yeah, it's one of our huge chunk of our core activities, the CDC funding.
So
my point being, it's hard to be a positive person in San Francisco and not have pursued victims and not be a consumer.
Right.
And on the broadest definition.
I wondered if there's like an equivalent income-wise to like, I feel like the spirit of Ryan White also is that it's the provider of last resort, so I wonder if there's like an equivalent on the prevention side or if that matters. I'm just, okay.
Well, I mean, leaving it as is actually allows the greatest opportunity of people who are positive to become co-chair.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And then there could be discussion whether or not that's somebody who is involved in Ryan White for services or not at that time, but if there's not if we don't have the membership to support that, we could also consider something else. So we're not tying our hands.
I mean, the spirit of this, yeah, as a consumer, right, is HIV positive. So it's not like, I don't think anybody's objecting to someone getting a condom versus, oh, HIV positive, that work for the AIDS Foundation and their consumer grants for prevention because of their the idea that you want sort of a better representation of the general public as HIV as opposed to someone who's an insider. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an easier way to do it than making it about some sort of condom.
Yeah, I mean, historically we've never checked to ensure that most of the HIV health services
provide
mixed funding and clients don't often know which they're being billed to, and it's an ambiguous point. So I think it's the spirit of what we're trying to accomplish with that as a goal, rather than parsing it out and making sure it's personal instructions.
So I guess my question is, if the spirit of the goal to not just have the person be HIV positive, but to have that person be HIV positive and meet a certain kind of income qualification, because if that's the case, then we could include an income qualification as part of this conversation. But if it's just that the person is HIV positive, then anybody who picks up a condom is a consumer of service, and then it's kind of a different conversation. So I don't know if you've ever had a situation on the care side where it's an HIV positive person who is not a consumer of Ryan White services wanted the position and they couldn't get it, or they didn't get it because somebody else who was a consumer of Ryan White services got it, or anything like that. I don't know. I think I just want to put my finger on what the value is. It's more specifically.
I guess, I mean, we're talking about the leadership position, right? We're not talking about just like a program and meeting a target audience. I mean, we're talking about a candidate who's running for an office, right? So I guess.
Co-chair of a larger.
Right.
I have mine.
Yeah, I think, given income inequality and under insurance, all that kind of stuff, someone could actually be insured and work for an organization and still be on ADAP. So I think the point is well taken about, I don't think we should be super restrictive about it. We should go with the spirit of intent here, and we should discuss it when we're actually voting in or thinking about the candidates at each given time.
And with prevention, I mean, someone says they're consumer services, and we have to take that.
Yes.
They are. We have the jobs of people's sex and drug lives to ensure that they
are. Do people feel like there's a downside to leaving it a little more open? Is there anyone in the room who actually would argue the opposite end of this?
Well, all I'd like to say is that what it ensures is that at the leadership level, HIV positive people are making decisions for HIV positive people and their right. And Jack, that's the spirit of it. All that is a, that the care side is a community board, largely made up of consumers. So our rules, our policies and procedures are that they insert them in all leadership positions.
So could we just change that to one co-chair as HIV positive and leave it at that?
At least one.
At least one.
At least one. Yeah.
So then this would open up so they do not have to be resource service in any regard, just having an HIV positive.
But also even HIV positive consumer of service.
No, I just meant an HIV positive person. Because I mean, if you, I'm gonna guess that everybody who's an HIV positive in here has at one point been a consumer of services. So or you know, knows the services that are out there. And so
I don't know. I mean that might be a little too loose. I mean some ways if you want to actually reflect to what HRSA considers as a mandate for us. You know, they're not, they don't mandate anything as far as our leadership positions, but their mandate is pretty clear. They're talking about consumer services when, they, when they're talking about people who are positive. So I think to leave that out in some ways not adhering to what HRSA would like to see, but it also, I mean, leaving it in still applies to prevention and care easily.
So I would prefer leave it in as it is because of the fact that it's going to at least guarantee that there's one person that's going to be a co-chair that is a not a consumer of services that are, is not affiliated with any other thing. And then that way, that person still has the voice.
Yeah. Everything you said minus the affiliated part. Yeah.
Right.
So this person could be affiliated. So they could be a provider of services. Yeah. Right, okay.
They could be a government rep. You know, they could be anything as long as they're also that.
And then that fulfills your guys the mandates from care around.
It fulfills our current bylaw mandate. There is no HRSA mandate around leadership.
Okay. So I think, because I'm just looking at time, I think we should explore just the bucket of co-chairs right now so that we could actually finish that and have a motion on co-chairs. So are there other mandates from either HRSA or CDC on co-chairs of the merged, of the broader leadership?
Well, so sorry to adjust what you just said, but there actually are no mandates except from CDC.
Okay.
HRSA has not weighed in on leadership positions.
Okay.
So all of the mandates that I'm talking about are self mandates.
Okay.
About
gotcha.
HIV positive woman, person of color.
Gotcha. Thank you.
The
CDCs
are one government co-chair and at least one community co-chair.
Okay.
Community, could you define at least one
community
co-chair?
Community
co-chair.
Provider,
consumer,
yeah.
Someone
not government.
Yeah, on our council, we said, just not a mandate, but we said that co-chair could not be an appointed seat. So it could be a provider, but it could not be a provider of appointed seat.
Now, previously, before we restructured our council, we have had community co-chairs that were community government employees. It was complicated, but we... But now we kind of changed that by specifically putting in the wording about appointed.
So maybe we should go to the next drop hole being the mandate from CDC around a government co-chair.
Well, I mean, is a mandate, is it a discretionary topic? Or I mean, is it a mandate from CDC that we need to provide by?
I think having a discussion and a vote in some ways clarifies a potential issue. It's come up a little bit, but there is the idea that there are some EMAs and TGAs who have fulfilled that mandate by having a co-chair of a committee designated to look at the prevention mandate would satisfy that. But if there's a vote now that actually is about around, let's have a government council co-chair that takes away that
so
the future of that discussion.
the wording in the CDC mandate does say that it's for the council. When I read it, I thought it was pretty clear that it was for the council, not a committee of the council. It said it would have one governmental share of the council.
Yeah, that does seem clear, but we also know that there are EMAs and TGAs who have fulfilled that mandate by having. I'm not sure that just requires a dialogue with the CDC officer or not. So what I'm saying is, like, if you guys decide to have that, then that discussion becomes moot. You know what I mean? Not that I want it to become moot, but it's you.
I have a question about it, more about how it's executed in practice. So obviously with prevention as it stands, it's been a CHEP representative. Is that something that would be continued? It would have to be a prevention section government rep, or would this fall into, like, since we have other government representation on both councils, is it like a free for all? Like, would, like, let's say in Margo and Sandy, who's the government rep for housing, would this be? I guess I'm just wondering about the language, or
change the voting seat.
Yeah. Is there any specificity around?
I don't think there's. From what I remember, the CDC guys, I don't think there was that specificity.
There wasn't, but it does say in the roles of the health department co-chair around being able to implement change. Like, there's certain roles that are set out in the CDC guidance that it would have to be someone at least in the health department working in HIV. So it couldn't be someone from emergency preparedness that could fulfill that seat, because they wouldn't have the mechanisms to bring back what the council decides and implement that within the health.
So a little closer to home then, would that also mean that it would or would not, could or could not possibly be, say, a person from substance use or a person from housing or a person from this or that? Does it have to be within HIV-centric services? Yes. Okay.
So basically it would be
someone, yeah. I think the way I interpreted someone that was doing work with HIV programs, it would fall in either HIV health services or CHEP.
Like, it's an answer to Ellen's question that it wouldn't have to be CHEP. It would actually, it could be any government representative who was from an HIV branch of the department.
Yeah, that would have
to be. Who would be able to enact council mandates or advice.
Yeah. It's a little more specific because it's about the managing of the CDC funds, which lives in the CHEP branch right now.
I mean, it also gets very complicated when you look at the difference between advisory functions of a council and mandated one. It suddenly becomes complicated with the council mandating something to DPH, with the head of that council receiving the mandate, who also is a part of that mandate. It gets complicated.
It was easier when we were just the AIDS office and we're all together, right?
So with that, it seems to make sense that one co-chair, government co-chair comes from either HIV Health Services or CHEP, and possibly whatever division is not a co-chair has a seat on the council. So it participates on a different
level.
Yes. So then that keeps the representation from both divisions.
Definitely. There's another motion from the CARE Council that does kind of intersect with this one, and I don't know if the CARE Council folks would call this motion. It's a motion that says every leadership position is voted upon by the council. I think it was specifically in a reaction to the idea of a co-chair being appointed by local government rather than voted on by the larger group, which could be a contentious issue, but then, you know, if there's more than one option, it might not be so contentious. Say the gene takes a dip in popularity.
And that was 18 months ago, and
there are photos up there somewhere.
Okay, so are you ready for the straw poll? I'm thinking that we should do one SFDPH co-chair, either. It's basically managing or, you know, part of the HIV program. So it's really either CHEP or HIV. And the separate one around the seat we'll do later, okay? But so, level of agreement. Are we ready for this or any questions?
Could we, do we have to, we don't have to get specific about the co-chair seat being elected by the whole council. That's later in policies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, let's just establish the policy.
Yeah.
And the proceed.
Yeah.
Okay. One, veto. Two, do not support but will go along. Three, abstain. Four, support with reservation.
Two, three, four.
Four for four.
Okay. Five, strongly support.
Well, Bill left.
Oh, yeah. Okay, thank you. Okay, so do we want to have discussion around the support? Oh, I mean, I guess we're just, I think this is where you want to look at, even though there's, it's primarily fours and fives, you still want to ask the reservation question.
Okay, so, well, I want to put anyone on the spot, but if you care to explain what your reservations are and how they could be.
No, I was just going to say, I'm agreeing. I voted five, but I'd love to know what the reservations are. It might be something ahead to consider.
Anyone? TJ.
So, I mean, I have kids in the seat that needs to be in leadership. I just want to make sure that we as a council vote on this person and not have an appointment from DPH. And, you know, I think that's really important. And it's also
challenges that came out of that. I think these are some of the values that we want to instill in this moving forward. It was that there wasn't really a lot of transparency. It was like, this is happening, and then it happened, and we're like, wait, why won't we communicate about this? Well, your leadership will communicate about this. And so it became so sort of this transparency that where Cheryl wants the leadership, but it wasn't really this area that wants the council. And I think that was the biggest challenge that came out of that. The second thing is also, and again, it's about values, is that, you know, we're in the business of having a great business. Well, we are. We really are sort of like, how do we really, you know, affect the most folks with the best quality of care with the resources that we have? And I think when we had the challenge with our governmental co-chair, it's like, they're like, this is our new business model. And we're like, oh, we didn't form that business model. You know, it didn't come from our input. It was kind of sort of given to us from the CDC, and we were just like, whoa. So I think what we dealt with was that we had to have a lot of communities sort of like processing. They really called in like a lot of like community members to have that process happen. And then there were not mandates, but there were sort of like some future moving forward guidelines that I think we've adopted in terms of how we communicate things, how we really try to include community members who are not even part of the council to come and give their voice, their public comment. Because you know, there were a lot of communities that during that whole structure that were excluded from sort of funding. There was like, you know, we had to really look at the hard numbers of science and be like, this is what we have, and we can't be funding these programs, and these programs are not, that's not high impact prevention. And so it was one of the things we had to come to sort of like an agreement as a whole, but that didn't happen before we were given that sort of mandate from CDC. It was like, oh, this is the direction you're going in, and it was really hard.
Next, I have Andrew, the dean. Actually, then Aileen, then Mike.
So I think for the most part, since I came in after the restructure, so I don't have that experience. My experience of working with government has been having an ally in a position where the things that we vote on can actually have substantial change within the systems that we operate in, and without having that government buy-in. Sometimes, like, if we voted on something, I guess then we would then need to pitch it to government and then say, hey, this is what our council wants. Is this something that can be done? Whereas when you have already the buy-in from having a government culture, see, that's already there. So a decision's made, and we're like, all right, let's run with it. And let's have it hit the ground running. Things that have come up is that there are times where we will have conversations that, because of the role of government, they're not allowed to say certain things, like what we talked about. Substance use, and we talked about like crack pipe, you know, distribution. Government was just like, we cannot have this conversation, and so we were like, well, we can totally have this conversation. We're not government. We can totally bring it up in a meeting, and you know, and it wound up kind of being discussed. And government was allowed to they didn't weigh in, but the government, we still had the conversation and made the papers and whatever, minor ruffles and feathers. But I mean, we're still. Because we're not government, we are able to kind of challenge things and still have a voice, even though it may be something that kind of conflicts with the governmental seats, but we're still able to have that voice.
Dean and then Adam?
I'm enjoying this conversation. I just wanted to share a couple of observations. One, we've had co-chairs that haven't agreed on positions before and likely voted differently on things. It's not an uncommon occurrence, and that will continue. And we're not talking about a co-chair having the ability to veto anything or, you know, withdraw a vote or stop anything. It's just about having the involvement as the CDC would like to see it. And I forgot the third thing that I said.
I remember Rachel.
Challenges with the governmental co-chair, but however I will. There were two separate issues that happened kind of concurrently, and one was the changes that were happening. Well, actually, there was three changes that were happening nationally with the national HIV strategy, the release of the new community planning guidance, and then we had a director who didn't have the same sort of understanding of community approach. So all those things impacted the work with the council, and it was a real lesson learned because we had to do a lot of cleanup after that of just reinvigorating our community work. And so it was a lesson learned, that's what I'll say. And I know that when we were in that period, at the end of it, the governmental co-chair learned a lot about community and now truly values community. I mean, no longer at the health department, but recognizes the impact of trying to push something through. And I really appreciated at that time as management of community planning that our council members all felt empowered to push back. And you guys definitely did. I mean, specifically Jack and Mike were big on that, and then you two as community co-chairs. And we ended up with something that was a compromise of both. What the council does have is that we need to vote on letter of concurrence. And if the council does not agree with what the health department's presenting, they have the power to vote no or concurrence with reservations. And that calls for an immediate visit of the CDC and sort of mediation. And that particular challenging time, it was right up until the end of the vote that we thought that we were going to have definitely like a concurrence with reservations because of the process and the challenge. I mean, so that's the importance of having someone who does sit in the government seat to really have that understanding and value the community partnership so that something like that doesn't happen. But members always have in their back pocket their vote, and we don't want the CDC to come here and have mediation and call us out and call us. So
I think this is an interesting and thoughtful conversation, so thank you everyone for this. I think the history of the Prevention Planning Council has been that we have had a functional council oftentimes and a good relationship with the department representative and co-chair. I do think that it begs the us to think about how we would deal with raising agenda items or adding having membership be able to put something in steering committee or other things so that if the government co-chair is kind of leading the process by the nose or by some other device of some sort, that there's some way for membership to actually, outside of the letter of concurrence, which I agree, is that's the bottom line, letter of concurrence. But when you get to a letter of concurrence, a lot of times, if the group is not functional, and people are not participating at the level that at which they need to participate, it can be easy to get the letter of concurrence, even though the department is leading the process by the nose. And let me say, that's what happened that time. Okay, because there are plenty of us who did not want to concur, but there are plenty of people who didn't know what was going on in the room, and they concurred anyway. That's my opinion. Okay, so I do think that this is really helpful to kind of think about what Dave is bringing up, what other people are bringing up, is I think we need to figure out how do you add things to steering, how do you add things to the table, and at that time, you can't do that. The problem has already been decided. That's what steering already put on the table. So we have to figure out how do you prevent something like that from happening, and in general, you don't have to worry about it, but I think it's good to think about it.
Ron and Paul.
So I wanted to formally add a reservation. You know, the care council, we vote in our three co-chairs to represent the council to the public. You know, they're the ones who speak for us when it comes to representatives. So to become a leader, we have to start from the beginning, I think. So we see our council members start from the beginning. They go from committee to committee. They become co-chair to those committees. And then maybe about 2 years, they're eligible for being a coach of the full council. I don't know how a government, you know, person who's appointed is going to have that same seniority. I don't see how they, for me, I don't see how I can say they represent my voice.
Thank you. I just want to note the time.
We'll cut off conversation when I get it done at the end of this list.
Okay.
I think a lot of good points are being made. So the suspicious me thinks that the government having a co-chair, it can be to try and sway and maybe put things off, like talking about safe injection settings and distribution of crack pipes, and try and enhance the language of talking about subjects that are more safer.
But what way is with the council, we have to interact
don't you want them there because of what Jack's saying and doing what we did? And you can facilitate. They've already got, you've got DPA to buy in because they're part of it. It's a bit like having us having buy in because everybody's part of the process. But, and that's what it's working, but it can, sometimes that can be personality based, you know, and the co chair, maybe a person is very sympathetic and radical. But if you get somebody who's fearful, Barbara Garcia, or something like that, then it can slow down a lot of the progress that the community would want to see just by kind of stonewalling. So it's a conversation about what are the mechanisms to make sure that doesn't occur. And it can be things like, oh yeah, the elect of different government folks, or at least they've been voted on the record or whatever, right? It could be shorter terms so that someone can't be embedded for so long. There's definite discussion.
Mark and Jack?
I also want to say that I love this conversation. It's really interesting hearing the perspective from the prevention side. I think in a new council, what's going to be exciting in some ways is that a merged council will have a mandate. It doesn't have a mandate necessarily towards the CDC goals. That will still, of course, be advisory and will need the letter of concurrence. But it will be a council that actually should and will need to understand you have actual authority. So agendas are not driven by the department. It's driven by the actual mandated body. And that might be a sea change, I think, for council members who just show up. I mean, I don't want to be critical, but that might be in some ways the problem solver of what challenges that Mike and Jack themselves have portrayed, is that this is a different sort of council. Like, as I think that CARIC is going to be able to learn a lot from having greater government integration and also just greater bigger picture, I think prevention will also be experiencing another its own positive change in being one that says, realize that you're part of a council that actually provides direction. And it doesn't need to be that. There always should be a discussion, but there, in the end, it doesn't need to happen. It's like mandated activities.
And Jack?
I think what I was going to say is in line with Mark. I mean, I think Andrew said is correct that like there's a lot of benefit to having a government co-chair, and I don't want to represent that I'm like standing in way of that happening. But I think that it's that small percent of time when we're not on the same page that is what we're trying to mitigate for, and possibly what will do that is a mandate, right? So if we're no longer in a position as a council where the CDC or the powers that be can just be like, no, we're going to do something else now because we have a mandate or we have a different sort of a relationship to the government or to the process, then maybe that 1% evaporates and then there is no relationship. So.
Yeah, I also just want to point out, we, on the CARE side, the CARE Council has both a mandate and also it does have advisory. It has advisory for general funds. But because we've had this ongoing relationship, like it's almost invisible. The advisory, like DPH treats them the same. And I'm hopeful that's what a merged council will have as well on the CDC side. I mean, partially it is because we have agreeable community-centered people who are in government positions like Eileen and Dean. But even if they were to change into people who are less, I guess, I don't know, less Eileen and Dean, there'd still be a council that's quite used to that authority in some way and not used to having to just say, well, what does the government want? Let's do that. I think a lot of it's just based on the culture that's created within the merged council.
Yeah, I just want to add that I'm really loving this conversation too, because what I'm hearing is really your hopes and dreams of what you want that merged council to look like, you know, and that there is... there are things that how is CARE going to influence in a good way what you want to do in the merged council? What are things from the prevention council that you also feel like are going to influence in a good way? You know, and so there were a number of things from when we did the July retreat that I think, you know, I'm going to go back and look at the notes, but I might send them back as highlights for all of you, because I think there were some aspects of, if, you know, in the lands exercise, if CARE could do these things for prevention, what would they be? If, you know, CARE could get some things from prevention, what would they be? And there were a number of things that I think it's just really surfacing here. And the other July conversation was that polarity exercise that we did around community and government. In that exercise, what was supposed to come out of it were, I think, some of the things that I think I heard David and Jack, you alluding to, which is there are some values of how you want to operate, you know, that will be your, you know, how do we ensure that there is that transparency? How do you ensure that there is kind of that equity represented? How do you make sure you're not, what are those red flags before you're down the deep despair, the pits of despair, you know, of government bureaucracy or like too much of an individual focus? So I'm just going to bring some of those back at the next meeting. And what do you think? We have 5 minutes.
We had an agreement that we would discuss all the aspects of the chair before we voted on anything. So this is a discussion we need to continue on the next time. So I don't want to have to vote. There's no need to vote on anything. I think we can just pretty much get into the evaluation. Do you have an evaluation?
Would it be helpful to
just
give us for a vote around where people are kind of aligned with things?
So yeah,
kind of,
sure.
We could capture that and kind of bring that back next time and say just where we were.
With respect to the government
culture? Yeah, to what we have up there, I would say.
I just wanted to add one comment. So as this discussion happened, I had additional thoughts, as I'm sure some of you did, and something you said, Andrew, that really concerned me, and that is, you know, I'm fine with government co-chair, but I get concerned if I think there's going to be a suppression of discussion or a broad consideration of lots of options. That if that narrows down the consideration of all the options on the table, I don't think that's a good thing. We need to serve the community the best way possible. We need to be open to all considerations, even those that may be politically unpopular.
Maybe I'll clarify. It wasn't that they were roadblocking anything. It's just government, they couldn't speak to it. We can't speak to this.
Okay, but others could.
Right. Yeah. And we were like, "Oh, so we can." I'm community. I can say whatever I want.
Mark. So I know you just said you prefer not to have a vote on this, but it seems like there's a lot of agreement around having a minimum of one person who is positive consumer services and one person who is an HIV health services department representative. And I guess I'm just going back to the small victories idea. I think that's.
Can I make a suggestion? Can we make can we have a vote on an agreement like we did last time when we made the votes and then we realized that we couldn't vote? So they were in agreement that we then brought over to the next meeting.
I don't think this government culture discussion is completely flushed out. I don't have that feeling. What do other people think?
Is this still this? Yeah.
Just this, right? Okay.
So a renewal of the straw poll? Okay.
Yeah.
It's the same straw poll we did at first.
Yeah.
The second
the
time.
The top one is in question, right? It's the below that is, right?
So well, the below we haven't necessarily discussed. I think the top one is what.
Okay.
I'm sorry. What's the below?
Like the second piece.
The second piece.
The co-chair, that's FTTH co-chair, the receipt.
No.
All right, yeah.
So the second straw poll of the one seat for government council co-chair. Right. Okay. Any vetoes? One?
Jessica.
Two, do not support but will go along. Three, abstain. Support with reservation? Five, strongly support. Okay, so it might not have been the same people, but it's the same, okay?
Well, I think this goes to Chip's point and my error. It showed the same numbers but different people.
Okay.
Can I just ask a clarification quick?
thought that it was mandated that I had to be pledged to. I was more of a, this vote is, well, it's already, it has to be. It's just the mechanisms that we were discussing, how does it become so. So I don't get why, because this seems to me, this is just me, and I say, there's no point of what we don't to me right now, because this has to happen. It's like, would it be put in place so that it doesn't have the pitfalls that have been eloquently expressed by the group? So that's about to what you mean.
I think that's true, but I for one am not going to vote for something until the details are planned out. You know, I want the whole deal before I vote.
Okay. I thought I'd vote for it, then we would get to the details. You know, people say there's going to be a vote.
Yes,
Well, we do not have an evaluation form, but can we end by if. In order to get clarity on this issue, what's one in like a phrase or two? What's what more information you would want? Can we just do a? What's that one more information that you're going to want in order to have a more clear opinion or discussion on this topic? You want to start?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
So, you start on that side.
We have to start on this side. So.
Maybe,
okay,
maybe just
start,
the people want.
We could start with David. I'm sorry.
What's the one thing?
You would want to, what's one thing that you're going to want to learn more about together around this topic?
You know, we talked about it a little bit. I think it's more about like policy procedure around just definition itself.
Okay. Jack?
I shifted my vote to a five. I think I'm down for the concept. I think I would like some flesh out of the details.
Okay.
But.
Details, right?
Yeah, I'd probably echo what Jack said. I think also, like, we were coming to our own conclusion. Right? So I think in some way just further discussion is what's required.
Okay.
I don't know it's necessarily a specific piece of information or knowledge.
Okay. Chip?
Some discussion around maybe how we might have a choice as government officials and or term limit.
I'm sorry?
And or term limit.
Okay. You could also pass.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the idea of having some information so that people can make a vote. It's not like that. We have to have a couple of candidates that are government co-chair so that the body itself finds something close to the factual appointment.
Okay,
and
so.
Just like some other parameters that we had discussion on that people were comfortable with before we met, but in principle, what can those change?
Opportunities for sneakiness and maneuvers, just saying.
Okay.
Not that the current people do that, but you never know who gets in here next. People are leaving out front.
Okay. DJ?
So I'm with Chip on, I want a discussion more about choice and then term limit.
Okay. Mike?
I think that what people have said in terms of more discussion, but I think specifically what went wrong was maybe we could think about what percentage vote by membership can move something that staring cannot reject or put aside. You know, so there has to be some mechanism by the membership to decide what staring is going to put on the agenda and that kind of thing. And that's where it went wrong before. Like we would suggest things to staring. Oh, move it to staring. Oh, well, we're not going to. We talked about it. It's not happening. That's what happened. So kind of thinking about from that.
Okay. I just wrote membership choice, kind of veto, even? Okay.
Or maybe just agenda building.
Okay.
Yeah. Membership building. Yeah. Okay.
I'm practicing the four agreements, and I'm not taking anything personally.
Thank you, Eileen. Yeah, I awkward, hard to have this conversation.
Like, term limits, yes.
Okay, Linda?
I think clarification on the policies and procedures, as well as just a clear understanding of what has worked in the past and whether or not we need to reinvent the wheel, or if something worked in the past, we just need to figure out how to apply it. I don't know. And then I think I really enjoyed Andrew, because initially when Eric, you had some questions around what has worked in the past and why, like, a lot of questions. It's so far from my mind. But I really appreciate Andrew's explanation of how it worked, having the government representatives, so that I really appreciate that. So just clarity, a lot of clarity's good, and transparency is even better.
Thank you. Michael?
So I'm glad we're exploring all these things. Term limits for me is very important. But personally, in terms of additional information, I would need to make a vote on this. I don't think I need additional information. I think my vote will probably always be a form. I will always have reservations. And those won't be satisfied until I actually see in council reactions and how it actually works. There's always going to be a made reservation about concern about politics and reactions and decisions.
Okay. But can I write here even a discussion on how will we know when we've achieved what we want to achieve?
I'm not sure. Second answer. We all have the same reason.
Okay.
And I'm ditto for the choice in this term.
Okay.
So that's my
opinion. Okay, great. All right, thank you.